Welcome to Upball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry. As always, we are excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest news, scores, stories, and more. If you subscribe today, you can use code PODCAST20, that's PODCAST20, for 20% off an annual subscription. We are super excited today to go over our preseason top 25, and we are joined by Marissa Young, Duke head coach. And now we're joined by my co-host, Rhiannon Potke. Rhi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's been a bit crazy. On our site, d1softball.com, we just released our top 25 preseason poll. We've got loads of conference previews coming up and interviews, and just really excited to get started with our season, heading into the season here in less than almost 3 weeks.
Yes, if you paid attention to every team, and every team that has a number that is in the 20s has been telling us which number corresponds with the countdown to their first game and their player, which I actually love that idea, like the jersey numbers, you know. Very creative ways to count down by our teams on social media. So that's fun to check out.
Well, with just 3 weeks heading into season, we're going to go over our top 25 preseason poll. We'll start with 1 through 5. We've got the Oklahoma Sooners as the number one. Then we've got Alabama, Oklahoma State as 3, UCLA at 4, and Florida at 5. Rhi, what are your initial reactions to the 1 through 5 in our preseason poll?
Solid group. Obviously Oklahoma is the clear runaway favorite. No question there. I mean, if anyone didn't, it would be, I mean, you could, you have claims for other teams, like Alabama's gonna be pretty strong, but I think the defending champion bringing back almost everyone, having such a lethal lineup, adding so much freshman talent, clear cut. I mean, the state of Oklahoma is going to be softball fanaticism there with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State in the top 5 right off the bat. The cool thing about all these teams is that they're all playing really, really tough schedules, so they're gonna be challenged early, so we'll get to see. But yeah, no real qualms. I mean, this was a really, you know, in a way it was an easy like top 10-ish range, but in a way it was hard just to kind of separate, like, you know, the order. To me, you can kind of interchange some of these, to be quite candid, like once you get past like the top 3. But really solid group. Interested to see how UCLA kind of, I don't want to say bounces back, but without Rachel Garcia, but you know, Megan Faramo, kind of see how their whole team comes together. It was such a strange season for the Pac-12 last year. So a lot of intrigue in terms of now going back to kind of a quote unquote regular schedule and how that, you know, how we, what we see from teams there.
So that's 1 through 5 in D1 softball preseason poll. Then we've got Florida State runner-ups last year at number 6, Washington at 7, Arkansas at 8, Texas at 9, and Mizzou rounding out the top 10. You know, the Florida State at 6 was a little bit of a bone of contention from the Seminole Faithful down there. What are your thoughts, Rhiannon, 6 through 10?
Yeah, it is. And I totally get that. I mean, you come your second, you know, runner up in the World Series. And, you know, to be quite candid, and I know Lonnie would say the same, is that, you know, they hadn't up and they didn't have like this, they didn't win a turn, they didn't win the ACC, they didn't win the tournament title. They kind of found their stride there at the end and really hit the chemistry, which is, her teams are kind of known for that. They kind of coalesce late. She kind of experiments a little early. So that's kind of, you know, you lose a pitcher like Caitlin Arnold from that staff. And although they have Sandra Koch and Daniel Watson coming back, you still got to see it on the field, see how they, you know, bring some of those new players in. And, you know, honestly, their offense last year was not great to start with. They kind of had to, you know, figure out a few things. So I, you know, you could place them higher for sure, but, you know, right there, I think they're fine starting there. I think if they, you know, they'll legitimately work their way up if they, you know, coalesce quickly. But it wasn't, you know, and it's, that's, that was kind of the magic of that run. It wasn't like they had like this unbelievably undefeated season last year. So I'm just interested to see how, when they come back, because they did lose some key parts. I mean, really some key components. So it's going to take a little while for them to gel. And if these teams are as good as their fandom thinks they are, they'll work their way up quickly. We don't like, you know, we're not like hard and fast. Like, you got to, you stay where you are. You can move up quick. So on Florida State, that's kind of my thinking on that. I think it's, you know, it's a fine place to start. You know, Alabama started, I think it was like 8 last year in our poll, right? And they were all excited because they were disrespected, and 8's a good place, and they usually make it to the World Series. So, and that happened. So, you know, could happen again.
I think the Alabama fans are wanting to go back at 8. They weren't happy with the 2 ranking.
We were talking about that off air, like the disrespect card is played so much in every sport. Like we're having like Heisman winning trophy quarterbacks who were 5-stars saying they were disrespected, which I'm like, how is that possible? You were like a 5-star that every college wanted, but whatever floats your boat, guys, get the chip on the shoulder. You know, you can figure out a way. That's great. But yeah, that Arkansas, you know, glad to see them in there. I mean, they're going to have to, they got some quality transfers coming in, but their whole thing, I'm sure, is just to live up to what they achieved last season with the first SEC regular season title in program history, co-share with Florida. They kind of want to make sure that show that wasn't a fluke. I don't think they think it's a fluke, but I know they probably think that people were questioning some of the schedule strength and whatnot. So glad to see them sneak in the top 10. And Mizzou's just always one that seems to, you know, it's kind of funny. They seem to fly under the radar, even though they're always good. Like, it's like we know they'll eventually be there and beat teams. So I don't know if starting out at 10 is good or bad for that team too, but they'll be there in the end. So it's kind of a good little launching point. So how about your thoughts on some of those teams? Are you, what your thoughts on that 5-10 range?
Florida State, we talked about this, Ree, you and I were there. We got to watch that squad and they were really, it was a special team. And it was comparing the OU offense to the FSU offense. They're just completely different. You know, the Seminoles could manufacture runs. They put the ball in play. They were scrappy. They were crafty. And then OU just could hit the ball out of the yard. And so I would like to see what they do the first couple weeks of season and see how that offense kind of comes together and that, you know, the pitching staff goes forward. But Texas, I think Texas is going to be an interesting one. They're on that top 10 again. Can sometimes underperform. They had some defensive miscues last year, but Mike White's an incredible coach and we'll see how the Longhorns do and see how they react to having Miranda Ellis with the Cowgirls. I think that's another interesting storyline.
Well, their checkmate is we got Haley Dulcini. So that's something that they kind of say, hey, checkmate, we got her. So that's kind of why I still thought they're going to be fine because they got her, Janae Jefferson, you know, in the outfit, they got talent. So they should be okay. But yeah, it's going to be fun to kind of see. I love when things get a little spicier with some of those rivalries and everything. And the Big 12 knows that Big 12 is going to hate OU and Texas for a little bit because the SEC escaped their planning. So this is going to be even a little spicier these next few year or two, whenever they eventually check out and go.
So that's 6-10. Then we had 11-15. We've got Virginia Tech checking in at 11, Michigan at 12, Duke at 13, Clemson at 14, and Arizona rounding out the top 15. Ree, what stands out to you on the 11-15 teams?
ACC representing stands out to me, man. The depth of that conference, and we'll talk about it later with Marissa Young from Duke. The addition of Duke and Clemson as softball programs in that conference has made that conference so much more entertaining and fun to watch. It used to just be FSU and then, you know, occasionally maybe, you know, North Carolina, Notre Dame would pop up there, but having those three programs right in that little tightly packed, I mean, honestly, you could flip a coin with some of those. Either Rashard back for Virginia Tech. I mean, talk about a workhorse. That girl was like over 30 starts. It's just crazy. I mean, she was in every... I'm hoping they can get her a little bit more help. They got a key freshman coming in that can get her some help to, because I think for them to stay there, they have to improve their defensive miscues and get Keely a little bit more rest and a little bit more. I mean, she honestly, she showed that she really doesn't need it, but I think she does. I honestly think they need other person to kind of give different looks. So that's what that group sticks out to me. It's just that ACC is really, really, they've boosted that conference hugely. And now they've got the TV network so we can watch their games. It's really, everything's trending up for the ACC.
Yeah, and what sticks out to me actually is Michigan. I think Michigan is going to make a run at it this year. I think they're a potential Women's College World Series team. They've got two, you know, strong arms in the circle and Alex Sirocco and Megan Bobby. And I just, there's something about them this year where I think they're going to be hungry. They did that conference-only schedule in the Big Ten. So I would keep an eye on Michigan this preseason and heading into conference play. So that's 11-15. Then we're going to get 16-20. We've got Oregon at 16, LSU at 17, Tennessee at 18, Georgia at 19, and Kentucky rounding out the top 20. Ree, what sticks out to you in 16-20?
Yeah, I'm interested to see with Georgia. You know, obviously they made the World Series last year, which was kind of a surprise, to be quite candid. We didn't really see them, you know, getting all the way to the Women's College World Series. But having a, you know, Lou Harris Champer step down and then losing Mary Wilson Avant as their, I mean, she was like, she carried them to that World Series. So that's my biggest question mark with Georgia, is that can they find anything in the circle to suitably replace her in terms of by committee? Because it's going to be really hard. She was basically, you know, the only pitcher that was super effective, and that's going to be a hard replacement in terms of her ability and her senior leadership. So we know Georgia can usually hit. They've got speed. They usually defensively, they can clean up a little things from last year that they're working on, but they've got athletic talent. It's just, I'm interested to see if they can stay up there and if that pitching can come through. So that team jumps out to me in that group.
Yeah, that's a huge pot of SEC teams right in a row there in that 17 through 20 range. But I'm going to head on over to Oregon and talk a little bit about the pack. I think Melissa Lombardi, she got Sam Martyr now, who's named associate head coach at Oregon. Brooke Yanez in the circle. I think this is going to be a telling year for the Ducks and see how they can do in the pack, and then hopefully in the postseason see how they do, because they had that loss to Texas. Remember, they were sent over to Texas, and Texas Oregon little rivalry there with all those transfers and Mike White, and
we
know the story.
It's complicated.
So that's 16 through 20, and heading out or rounding out the top 25, we've got 21 is ASU, Arizona State. We've got 22, Louisiana, Northwestern at 23, Liberty at 24, and James Madison at 25. That's the top 25. Ree, final thoughts on the last five teams entering the top 25?
Okay, well, we know what is going to be. The James Madison JMU faction has already let us know that what's with them being so low, but I honestly want to see if James Madison has actually seen who's on their roster, some of these people tweeting at us, and has listened to our podcast when their own coach, in fact, pretty much said, like, we are completely rebuilding. I mean, in a sense, they reload there, but it's a brand new team. Alyssa Humphrey is a great anchor to have in the circle, but they graduated 7 senior starters. So that's, the fact that they're in the top 25 to me is a kudos to that program's, you know, past and their history, but we know nothing about them right now. So we have to give them time. So it's a salute to them. Earned all they were given last year with that run to the World Series. But I need to give them time to see how they're going to coalesce. And it's such a young team to put that on them, that burden. I think they're perfectly positioned at 25. And if they drop out for a few weeks, so be it. They'll come back for sure if they do, but we need to see them, give them time to grow. So calm down. You know, it's not disrespect. It's literally, even their own coaches admitted, like, this is a completely different team and we have no idea what to expect.
Yeah, we love James Madison. We did the pitching circle with Odyssey Alexander and Alyssa Humphries before the Women's College World Series, before they even made that run. And we're a huge fan of the Dukes. And we're excited that they have fans that are really excited
about football. I love it. I'm excited. I love that they're like, I mean, this is great. Like, kudos to their fan base. I love their fan base. And the fact that they're so, like, you know, just like riled up about it is great for softball. But, you know, we also have to give them the reasons. It's legit reasons. And, you know, maybe they don't want to hear it, but I think it's a legit reason. And I'm glad to see them in that group. But yeah, other than that, you know, Liberty, Dot Richardson down there, always, you know, it's pretty much, this section is kind of like the legit mid-major section, you know. We're only kind of missing maybe UCF and BYU, which will be Big 12 teams soon. But just kind of those, like, established mid-major programs that we know we're going to be there, and we know we're going to knock off some high major teams. That section, that kind of sticks out to me, which is usually the case when you get all these polls in different sports, is you kind of stick a whole bunch of them in that last group, just knowing that they'll be good somehow, and like they'll climb if they're good, if they're better than we even thought.
Yeah, and I think we had a little bit of Twitter chatter about Wichita State, which I kind of, the same thing with Wichita State. They lose their ace in Bailey Lang, and I think another thing, it's just one of those wait and see moments, but I think Wichita State is a bubble team, and I think they'll be entering that top 25 as soon as we see a little bit more out of them. So that's our preseason top 25 up on the site. We'll have breakdowns of each team for you to take a look at. We'll also have the next 10 that we believe could possibly break into the top 25. We'll start with some conference previews. We're heading us off with the Big 12. Graham Hayes will start us off with the Big 12, our conference previews. So make sure if you don't have a subscription to d1sovel.com to head on over there and get one now. Again, you can use podcast 20 as 20% off a annual subscription. Not prescription.
You could get a prescription because you might need, you know, that we could write you one for softball addiction. We could give you a prescription.
I think I need one of those right now. It's starting, season's about to start. I can feel it. So that's our top 25 that you can check out on the site, d1softball.com. Now, Ree, we're going to head into our guest of the week. Ree did a great interview with Duke head coach. Ree, what do you got?
Yeah, we had on Duke head coach Mercy Young. The reason I want to bring her on this week is because obviously we celebrated in the Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday. We're taping this on a Wednesday. So she's very proactive with, you know, a lot of events that take place with student athletes there during this week and making sure that, you know, it's all about unity and spreading awareness and education about diversity and Martin Luther King and what he's done. So talk to her, obviously, just about the program, you know, the rise, how she built Duke from the ground up, her own career at Michigan, and a lot, too, about what she did this week with her team involving Martin Luther King Jr. and the rest of the student athletes at Duke.
All right. Rhiannon Podkey interviewing head coach Marissa Young.
We are now joined on the D1 Softball Podcast by Duke head coach Marissa Young. Young started the Duke program from scratch and is 121-74 in her 4 years at the helm. Last season, Duke was 44-12 and won the ACC tournament title for the obviously the first time in program history. We are really, really excited to have Mercy Young join us today. Thank you so much for being on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me and excited to talk about Duke softball.
Yeah, we're, you know, the countdown has begun. We're less than a month from the first game and getting excited seeing all these teams tweet out jersey numbers of the 20s down to the teens, that all the players they have. How's the team looking? How are you feeling about this year's squad?
I feel great about where they are and really proud of our kids and their commitment to work over the break. You know, you expect them to go home and have to come back and get back into the swing of things. And honestly, we've been able to pick up right where we left off at the end of the fall. And so I'm just really excited to have this group compete and see what they're able to accomplish this season.
And we kind of see you started this program basically from scratch, you know, the brand new awful program has been incredibly successful in your time. How did you go about building that program from the inaugural season in 2018? It sounds like a very, almost like, it's hard to even imagine like what's in front of you. It just seems like there's so much stuff to accomplish. How did you kind of break that up and how did you build that gradually to where you guys were, you know, pretty much immediately contenders and beating people right off the bat?
It was a major undertaking and felt very much like a startup business. And I think, you know, people in startups will tell you got to surround yourself with great people that believe in your vision and also are willing to work as hard as you are to accomplish those goals. And, you know, we had a great group of kids who's now in their fifth year as grad students who were 100% bought into coming here and building something great at Duke. And they've laid the foundation of what the standards are. We've always had set the standards high and play the best competition we can to prepare ourselves to be champions. And these women are incredible people. They are accomplishing great things in the classroom. They are doing great things in their career field and now winning championships. And really that was the goal from day one. And I'm just happy to see it happen in their 4 years here, because again, they're the women that believed in it, that came here and made it happen.
Yeah, and you being, you know, one of two new programs in the ACC with Clemson starting, you know, 2 years ago, but that was kind of a year that we all would just rather, you know, kind of shortened year. We didn't really count. So this last year, their first full year, the depth in the ACC has really, really increased and for the better. I mean, we see like, you know, it used to just be kind of Florida State and then everyone else. And how do you feel about that? I mean, it seems like it's just such a fun conference now to follow more because of all those great teams. And have you seen that and kind of what are your feelings on that increased depth?
It is definitely happening, and it's great for our conference. It's great for the sport. And it's been great for our team because being able to have those, you know, gritty games weekend in and weekend out against our conference opponents definitely helps prepare you for postseason stress and being able to play under the gun, which is what you need.
Yeah, and it's great too. We got the ACC network now, so there's a place where we can see all the games. It's really been a great time for it to really expand and become a better conference and deeper conference. You know, Marissa, I had you on this week because we really, it's a great time to get you on because we did celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day on Monday. And you've played a big role at Duke with some activities on campus that you've kind of set up or helped to celebrate and educate some of the student athletes. Can you tell us a little bit about the things you've done and maybe particular what you guys were able to do this week?
Yeah, we've really worked as a team to make continuing the conversation after the social injustices that happened in the spring and summer of 2020 to keep that ongoing. And our players have been really open and invested in learning more of how they can make their communities a better place. Last year, we started collectively the Unity. It was supposed to be a Unity Walk, but obviously with COVID, we ended up having to do it virtually and still had about 300 participants and, you know, being able to have guest speakers, that being student athletes, to just share what their experiences are like and to sort of rally the troops to continue moving towards diversity and stamping out racism. So we did that for the second year this year. We hope to make that an annual event. And also we brought in a group called A Long Talk, who is committed to having conversations and equipping student athletes and staff members in ways to end, you know, remarks or jokes or things that are going on in our day-to-day that we tend to just let pass us by, and giving us the tools to help end racism in our team, within our communities. And it was a really powerful experience to all do on Monday and on MLK Day.
Yeah, that's great. I've enjoyed following kind of what you guys have been doing and just bringing in all the other sports too when you can. You know, being in your position as a Black female head coach at a Division I college softball program, how do you feel? What needs to be done to kind of increase those ranks? I mean, we see a few more hires here and there, but obviously there's a big way to go. What role have you tried to play, or any advice that you have that we could try to, you know, get that ranks a little higher in softball in particular?
I think we need to increase access in the community first and foremost, so that more young people of color are playing the sport, have access to the sport. But I think the biggest piece is that we need to move away from diversity hires just being something to do, you know, really seeing that people like myself, and there's so many others out there that are well equipped to be in these positions. It's not just a check the box kind of thing. And I think if we can change that stigmatism, I think that is going to help people in power that are making decisions see that as not just something to do, but the best thing for their teams and their organizations.
Yeah, definitely. It's been nice to see, I mean, anecdotally, just more players of, you know, all races and colors entering the sport and excelling. And hopefully that can be something to build. I mean, obviously softball's not alone in this fight with trying more diversity and all the coaching rank we've seen in the NFL this last few weeks too, if you follow that. You yourself were a three-time All-American pitcher at Michigan, which is crazy. Pitcher of the year in 2002 and then Big Ten Player of the Year in 2003, which is not something you see very often to do both. How was your college career and experience? I mean, how did you feel about that and getting the opportunities you got?
You know, I was blessed to have parents that made every sacrifice under the sun to put me in a position to have the opportunity to do what I love to do. And, you know, I see myself as just one of the lucky ones, you know, to have parents so invested, and then, you know, have coaches that invested in me along the way, and to be able to play under a Coach Hutch who, you know, just treated me with the utmost respect and just like everyone else, I think was really, really valuable. And that I never saw my skin color as a roadblock. And it really just empowered me to continue to open doors for other people, and, you know, to do what I love, and to be able to be a pitcher and a hitter and play a position. You know, it just gave me a lot of confidence that she believed in me to do all those things. And I hope that I, as a coach, I'm imposing that same confidence and equipping our athletes to be great in whatever it is they want to do as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Coach Hutch's influence on you as a player and a coach. Is she still one that you kind of look towards to get advice and to kind of guide some of your philosophies?
Very much so. I at this point try not to go to her unless it's the big stuff, but she is just, you know, has a wealth of knowledge. She is true to herself, true to everyone, and super honest with me. So, you know, when you ask the question, you're going to get the heartfelt answer. And I think her experience is something she's seen a lot in her time. She's had to go through a lot in her time. And it really just makes you feel like you don't have much to complain about. Continue to get after it.
What, from your time as a, you know, as a player, it's obviously, you know, almost 20 years removed now, close to, what has been the biggest change you've seen in the sport?
I think that the players these days just have access to so much more. And I find myself all the time saying, man, I wish I had, you know, the use of technology or the data or, you know, just the tools that they have, the resources, social media and access to different drills and coaches all across the country, all across the world. I think that they really have the opportunity to take ownership of their craft because there's so much out there. And I think that can be a great thing, but also as a coach, I feel like it's our job to help them filter through all of that, to not just be consumers and to figure out, you know, of all of that stuff that's out there, what really is going to be impactful for me, what's for me, what's not for me.
Yeah, there's a lot now, a lot. I always wonder too, like, man, would I have been better if I had access to that? And there's really probably no, but still, it's interesting to think about that. So you didn't have that problem. You were good anyway. So you not only, I mean, the hours you put in coaching is amazing and what you've been able to do with that program, building it, but you also have 4 children while you're doing this. And they're all now, you know, pretty high level athletes themselves. Some are doing college searches. How have you been able to balance all that over these years? It's pretty amazing. You would never know that, you know, you never look flustered. You're always accepting of interview requests. How did you able to balance all that?
I haven't, to be honest. I think as a young coach, we believe that lie that there is some sort of work-life balance. And as I've gotten older, I've realized there is no such thing. It's really about figuring out, like, life is about different seasons. And in some seasons, I'm able to give my kids more and my work gets less. And in other seasons, you know, it's all work and my kids kind of get the leftovers. And so really that's how you balance it. Trying to give the best of yourself, to be where your feet are. And I want my players to know that they're my kids and I'm 100% invested and want the best for them. And I want my kids at home to know the same. So I feel like, you know, at this point I'm mothering in different places and just trying to help grow good young people. And I'm excited to see how my kids grow up and what type of adults they become. And I enjoy seeing my student athletes, you know, move on to the next phases of their life and have success there too.
How has it been to see your kids get recruited now, like to kind of go through that process? Because I know I've talked to a few coaches who are like, oh yeah, she was on a visit to our campus like last week. And I was like, what? That's crazy. How has it been to kind of, as a coach, you know, kind of be the parent coach and go through that?
It's a challenging dynamic. You know, they see me as just mom and I see them as just a player with these things that we've got to keep working on and we've got to get you better and we've got to prepare. And I have to catch myself and sit back and take the coaching hat off and just be a mom and watch them do what they do and embrace how good they are. And they work so hard. And so that's definitely tough to balance that mother and coach role with them, but we have a great relationship. Our family is all about softball and sports, and I'm thankful that they love the game as much as I do, because it definitely makes that split a little more manageable, because they love it as much as I do.
Yeah, they don't mind maybe watching games or going to the field. They were into something else. It might be a little tougher, I can imagine. what is something maybe we don't, you know, like you said, a lot of time with family and with softball, but anything else that you're able to do kind of to decompress, or something that a hobby of yours that's maybe not related to those, or any time to do any of that stuff?
Not really. I try to just, you know, work out and keep the body fit, the mind relaxed. And I feel like if I'm good to myself, then I'm in a better place to be good to others. But I would just continue to encourage young coaches out there to understand that you're constantly making sacrifices to, if you want to be great and excellence, there's a price to pay. And hopefully you're surrounded by family and friends that understand that and support you in your journey.
Do you get any time to, you know, TV or streaming, any shows that you like to watch just to kind of check out?
Law and Order is my go-to. I, prior to coaching, thought I was going to law school. So I still really enjoy those shows. And my husband and I have recently gotten into Yellowstone, which has been a nice change of pace.
Yeah. Well, you pretty much like Law and Order, anytime you sit down, you can find it on any like five different channels. So that's a good one to have, because you pretty much, even pre-streaming, you could have found it anywhere on cable. So now tell us about that. I mean, how did you veer from, you know, becoming a potential prosecutor to calling pitches?
I had a few prison visits and criminal transports that scared the bejeebies out of me. And I said, you know what? I think I'm tough, but I don't know if I want to be in this environment every day. And at the time I started helping out a friend who was running an indoor facility, and she needed a pitching coach. So I thought I was helping her by giving pitching lessons, and really fell in love with how you're able to connect with young people, how you're able to help parents help their kids, and just saw the impact I was having. And I realized that was my passion and that's what I wanted to do.
That's amazing. That's great. Yeah. Well, definitely have made an impact. And I'd encourage anyone, if you're in that, you know, wherever you are, but if you're in the area near Duke, Durham, Raleigh area, to stop by for a game. That stadium's really cool. I got a chance to watch a few fall ball games there and was super impressed. So I'm hoping to get there for a regular season game now that we've kind of, you know, more fans can get there hopefully this season. So we really appreciate it. We know your time is really, really packed, as we talked about. But I thought this week was a great week to have you on, and we're really excited about the season you guys have ahead. So hopefully we can get you back at some point. We've loved having your players on as well. Peyton's always one that we enjoy having on for her multitude of, you know, talents that girl has, Peyton St. George. So thank you so much for joining us today on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Thank you for highlighting Duke today. We appreciate it.
That's it for the interview with Marissa Young-Ree. Fantastic job. How important it is to have more Black women coaches, not only in softball, but across all sports.
Yeah, just a great, you know, great role model for any young athletes out there. Marissa Young, just the way she, you know, I don't know how she does it all, you know, with her own family. She's got, you know, four kids. She does Duke coaching. And she always makes time to do kind of advocacy for this stuff. She's always available. So really enjoyed hearing from her, and always excited to see kind of what they have this year. With, you know, they got a great team coming back. So that ACC race is going to be fun. So I'm sure we'll have her and more players on as the season goes, you know, gets going here for 2022.
All right. Well, that's it for the D1 Softball Podcast. And Ree, any final thoughts?
No, just, I mean, we're trying to crank out these, the season previews, the conference previews. We got so much content coming on the site. So as you said earlier, just subscribe. I mean, it's a great time. You can see it on social media. We tweet out like the subscription links if you need it. And if you have any questions, drop some, you know, into our mentions. You can ask the questions on Twitter, email us at info@d1softball.com. I mean, we'd love to hear from you and kind of what you're thinking, what you want to see. You know, if you have any questions for, you know, potentially we could answer them on the podcast or do a mailbag. We just really want the interaction, because we want your subscription to be worth it. And we want to provide you with all the softball knowledge you need to make the season fun.
That's right. So head on over to d1softball.com. Get your subscription now. We are rolling out, like Ree said, incredible content heading into the 2020 season. So that's it for the week. Tara Henry for Rhiannon Potke. We'll see you all.